Now, let's talk.
Organizations, businesses, nonprofits, and more in our area. And today we welcome back to the show Jewel Rozanski of Cultured Travel. Jewel, always good to chat with you. Welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be back. Good to see you.
We also have a special guest with us on the phone. We'd like to welcome to the show Professor Tom Madden. He joins us from Salt Lake City, Utah. Tom, thanks for taking the time. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So we're going to get into all things cultured travel here, including Tom's role with the group and some upcoming trips that are happening as well, along with a new book that is going to be out. So looking forward to today's conversation. But as always, we like to remind our listeners, hey, if you can't stick around for the next half hour, we do have you covered. You can go online to WISR680.com, look under our programs page. There you'll be able to find Let's Talk in today's conversation with Cultured Travel. You're also able to find us on Spotify as well. So if you're a Spotify listener, I encourage you to check it out there by searching for Let's Talk and WISR. You can find us on your desktop. You can find us on your mobile. If you download the St. Barnabas Radio mobile app, you can find us there. You can find us on your smart speaker, basically anywhere where you find audio. You can find us here on the Let's Talk show as we are talking with Jewel Rozanski of Cultured Travel and Professor Tom Madden on the program today. So, Jewel, just real quick before we get started, if you want to explain, in case folks haven't heard any of our programs before, what Cultured Travel is all about.
Yeah, so Cultured Travel is essentially a tour operator. You can think of it that way. And we design and curate unique tours throughout the world. And all of our tours are educational in nature. So I'm very excited to have Professor Tom Madden here with us today. He's been doing tours with us since 2019. And even provides lectures on the tours that we go on.
That's really cool. And Tom, if you want to maybe just explain your background to the listeners before we get things started as well.
Yeah, sure. I'm a professor of history at St. Louis University. My research specialty is Middle Ages, but I do the ancient world as well. I'm also the director of the Center for Medieval and Renaissance Studies at St. Louis University. On the trips, I come along and kind of tell people what it is they're going to be seeing for the next day. So I do lectures in the evening, and the lectures tell the story of the cities that we're visiting, but it also brings in those sites that they're going to be seeing the next day. And then I go along with them the next day as well. There is a licensed guide who goes with us, but I kind of work the crowd and offer color commentary while they're, and oftentimes people have questions, and so I'll give them the historical background of whatever it is they're seeing.
Well, I'm a football fan. I know we have John Madden, the football commentator, so I'm glad we have Tom Madden here for European trip analysis. So I just out of curiosity, Tom, what led you into a love of history and a love of things ancient?
Actually, it was in part it was because I wasn't good at anything else that I tried, but actually it was one of the cities we go to, Istanbul, which was originally Constantinople. When I was a bartender in Albuquerque, New Mexico, with no real prospects, I suddenly read a history book about that city and was completely fascinated by the medieval history of that city, and I spent much of my adult life studying it. So it, in a way, the city kind of rescued me from a long career of serving drinks. But I've been working on that for quite a long time, but then that interest expanded out. I also work on I've written a major book on the history of Istanbul, which has the really innovative name of Istanbul, and another book on Venice, which also has a similar name. So my research interest went to Venice and then the Mediterranean as a whole. So those are the things I mostly work on, is the history, medieval and ancient history, as well as the Crusades. I also work on the Crusades.
So let's talk about Istanbul before, because we've had Jewel on a number of times, but I don't really think we've talked too much about Istanbul in previous shows. We don't have, I'm sure you give me the 30-minute dissertation on Constantinople and Istanbul here, but generally speaking, Tom, for people who might not be familiar with Istanbul, what its historical impact is, and maybe if you want to elaborate too a little bit on what really drew you into the into that area's history.
Yeah, well, it's historically it's massively important. It's a city which Pierre Giles said it long ago in the 16th century that no matter what, humans are always going to build a city there because geographically it's at the perfect spot. It's right on the Bosphorus, which is the only waterway between the Black Sea and the Mediterranean. It's right on a peninsula, so it's heavily defensible. And so people have been living there really since there were people who could settle there. But the city itself today was primarily the city that was founded by the Emperor Constantine, the Roman Emperor Constantine, and that's why it was called Constantinople, which means Constantine City. And he made it the capital of the Roman Empire in the eastern half of the Mediterranean. And so when the Roman Empire fell, and everybody knows, you know, the Roman Empire fell in, you know, in the 5th century, when it fell in the west, it did not fall in the east. And so that capital, that city, remained the capital of the Roman Empire in the east. And so while Western Europe was in the Dark Ages, Constantinople was still having chariot races and people going through forums with lavish fountains. It was still the beating heart of antiquity. So that's one of the things that really fascinated me about it. And it remained that way. It remained the capital of the Eastern Roman Empire, which historians, we call that the Byzantine Empire for no really good reason. It's really the Eastern Roman Empire. That will last all the way until the 15th century when it's conquered by the Ottoman Turks. And so it's a fascinating city because it not only has all of that ancient Roman monuments and ruin sites that you can see, but then kind of plastered over all of that is 500 years of Ottoman history, Ottoman Turkish history, in which it was once again the capital of a major world empire under the Ottoman Sultan. So it's it mixes those two cultures together in a really wonderful way. So there's so much, I mean, everywhere you go, every street is filled with history. So it's just, there's always more to see, always more to discover.
So when you're traveling through the streets there, what's the architectural side of it that you're looking at? And are you pretty adept at identifying something as Roman architecture and a Roman type of building and then what a Turkish building would look like?
Yeah, I mean, definitely the Turkish buildings are preeminent. You see those more than you would see anything else because they've been living there for the last 500 years. But many of the buildings are reused. So those are the ones where, as soon as you look around, you see the Roman components of them. So, for example, no one goes to Istanbul without going to Hagia Sophia, which was the Sultan's mosque for 5 centuries. But it was a Christian church for 1,000 years before that. And so when you go there, you can see the mixture of both Muslim worship, because it's currently now a mosque again, but also all of the mosaics that were made in the 7th, 8th, 9th century. And then there's still a fair amount of Christian art there as well. And you see that there are really hundreds of similar kinds of buildings in the old city, which were originally Christian churches, but have been converted into mosques. You can readily see in those cases, these are Roman buildings that have just been repurposed. But of course, there are many mosques, like we always go to the Suleymaniye Mosque, which was built by the Turks, and it's a great achievement of architecture, of Turkish architecture. And although it should be said, it was largely modeled on the Roman architecture of Hagia Sophia. So there's a real blending of the Turkish and the late Roman or Byzantine architecture.
Jewel, how many times have you been to Istanbul?
Oh, goodness. I think 6, and one time I was there for 20 straight days because we did 2 tours back to back.
So you just hung out there?
Well, pretty much, yes.
What stands out to you? Go back to your first time there. Maybe something that surprised you about your trip there, or something that you weren't really expecting that came to fruition.
I mean, I think the history and how amazing it is, you expect it, but you can't really wrap your head around it until you go there and experience it. But honestly, how clean and safe the city is. I think there's some bizarre misconception of Americans that Turkey or Istanbul in general are not safe, and they are, Turkey as a whole and Istanbul are so safe and clean, and you just never would feel afraid or threatened, or like you might even witness a crime anywhere you go.
It's just, it's in pretty good shape then.
Oh,
huh?
Yeah. It's, yeah.
Tom, how about for you? I mean, obviously, now I'm assuming you studied Istanbul before you went there, correct?
Yes, I did. I studied it for many years. I was very familiar with the topography of the city, or I was familiar with the topography of the city around 1200. So when I arrived, I had to kind of adjust to get used to the modern city. But yeah, I studied it for many years, and I've been going there since 1989. So I've seen, even in the modern period, I've seen the city change quite a bit. As Jules said, it, particularly the old city now, is very, very safe, very clean. It did not used to be that way. I can tell you in the 1980s, it was not as clean as it is today. But they really made it they know that it gets a lot of tourists, and so they're they definitely want it to be a clean and safe place for you.
Was there anything that surprised you upon your first time in Istanbul?
I assumed that, because I was focused very much on the Roman, late Roman history, I assumed that all of the materials that were there and all the ruins would be treated much the same way that you see ruins treated in Western Europe. You know, that usually they're marked off, that, you know, they're parts of museums, you can go through them, you pay a ticket or something. In Istanbul, there's so much. And also, in many cases, the ancient ruins would just be like in a junk heap, or people would have moved into them. In some cases, you know, people would have made houses out of them. Now, that was true the first time I went there in the 80s. Now, since then, in the decades since then, the government has made people move out of the buildings, and they set them aside. And there's been a lot more restoration work now done, particularly on the walls, which are amazing. I mean, the walls are the land walls are some of the greatest architectural achievements of the Middle Ages. They're just massive, miles-long, triple land walls that that they've done a lot of work on now, you know, getting people to move off of them and restoring whole sections of the wall. Similarly with the Hippodrome ruins, which is where the chariots used to race, they've done much more work now on trying to restore those areas which still survive. So it was my biggest surprise when I went, but increasingly now, the government there is putting much more focus on trying to preserve the ancient past of the city.
I'm always, you know, again, I've never been to Europe, but again, I've studied history. Does it ever surprise you, or really, I think when you step back and look at it, how intelligent these people were? Because you're talking about architecture that is thousands, you know, of years old potentially, and yet here it still stands. Do you really grasp that concept whenever you're there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, let's face it, they're as smart as we are. they're just as intelligent. They don't have necessarily all the technology that we have, but they're you know, they're human beings who are just as clever as we are. The Hagia Sophia, or Hagia Sophia, which was the great church, it was built by the Emperor Justinian in the 6th century. They built it in 5 years, and it still stands in a city that gets pretty large earthquakes, because it's right there on the continental shelf between Europe and Asia, and it's still standing. It's been standing now for 15 centuries, and it's almost 15 centuries. And it is still just an absolutely amazing thing. They built it in 5 years. It demonstrates the wealth and the know-how of the Romans still in the 6th century. And you can, there's no building that I love to walk into more than that. When it was built, it was not only the largest church in the world, it was the largest building in the world. There was nowhere in the world where that architectural achievement had been reached before. In fact, it wouldn't be surpassed until the building of St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. And that was 1,000 years later, and it took over a century to build that building.
I did not know that. That is fascinating. Again, we're talking with Professor Tom Madden and Jewel Rozanski, Cultured Travel, talking a lot about Istanbul at the moment. Do you notice a blend of cultures while you're there, or does it lean one way or the other? I was just curious with the history and connection to Rome, to the Ottoman Empire. Is there a blend of culture, or is it? How does that look?
It's interesting because as you just walk around the streets, it's very, you know, it's very much a Turkish city, very much a Muslim city. There'll be the call to prayers. You'll hear the call to prayers regularly during the day, which goes from the minarets to the mosques across the city. You go into the Grand Bazaar, of course. It has very much a Turkish flavor to everything because the Turks have lived there for a very long time. But if you know where to look, you scratch the surface a little bit, then you can find all of the Roman history. So, for example, we always go down into the Basilica Cistern, which is right in the middle of the old city. And in this, it's really like stepping back into the ancient past. You go down these steps, down into this 6th century cistern, which has hundreds upon hundreds of columns, which are literally holding up the street above them and holding up the buildings above them. And it was used to store water during the ancient Roman Empire. And it's still there, and people can walk through it. They have it beautifully lit. But you're walking among these hundreds of columns. It's an amazing experience. And it's down there, it's quiet. It's very different than the kind of bustling Turkish city that's just above. So yeah, if you know where to look, you can definitely find that path. And it's always just below you. There are probably more than 100 cisterns like that throughout the city. It's just that's the one that's the easiest to get into.
Jewel, you know, I always got to ask about food. So what's food like in Istanbul?
Very fresh. there's a lot of very fresh food. It's you know, meats, vegetables, things like that. We do a food tour, a street food tour with our tour guide while we're there as well, which is always a lot of fun. So, a lot of kebabs, a lot of rice, just clean, fresh stuff.
Tom, I also want to chat a little bit about Rome and Venice as well, because, Jewel, correct me if I'm wrong, but Istanbul, Venice, Rome are all trips that you're planning for 2027?
Yes. So Istanbul's the one we've done the most. We've had, we fill those typically with about 20 to 30 people each year that we've done them. And then we've led 2 Venice trips, so we're planning on doing another one. And we've had 1 Rome one that we've done before and hoping to do another one of those this year as well. And they're just all fantastic.
So, Tom, obviously, you've laid out a lot of great history about Istanbul, but Rome and Venice, those also seem like, if you're a history buff of Europe, those are just limitless with history lessons to be had there.
Yeah, and they both are actually very, as far as history goes, they're both very connected to Istanbul, too. Venice was essentially originally an outpost of Constantinople. It was kind of it was part of the Byzantine Empire originally. And the first leaders of Venice, the doges, were themselves sent from the emperors in Constantinople. And the Venetians always had a very close relationship with Constantinople. In fact, in many cases, there would be as many Venetians living in Constantinople, Istanbul, as lived in Venice, because they were merchants who you know, they did business all over the Mediterranean. So there's a lot of connections. In fact, when people go, like, for example, when you go to Venice, the place you're always going to go see is San Marco, the Church of San Marco in the Piazza. And much of the things that you're looking at actually came from Istanbul. They were taken when the Venetians conquered the city in 1204. So there are the connections between the two cities weren't always friendly, but they were always very close. So that's why I became interested in Venice as well. When I do my archival research, I work in Venice because there are no medieval archives left in Istanbul. So I go to Venice, and where the materials still survive that talk about Istanbul. So yeah, Venice has a very close connection to it, and its history is also fascinating. Venice was the longest lived republic ever in history. It developed a republic when the whole world was having monarchies. The Venetians had a republic, and then it lasted for well over 1,000 years. So it's quite a fascinating city, and we spend a week really going through the history of it, both the medieval and also, of course, the spectacular Renaissance history of Venice, which everyone knows so well.
Is there a certain era that stands, if you're walking through Venice, is there a certain era that they highlight, or is it, again, a little bit of a blend of everything?
No, very much they highlight the Renaissance and the Baroque. That kind of style of architecture, which became popular with Sansovino and other Venetian architects. So the Palagio of various architecture, that's the kind of architecture which really brought Venice to its ultimate glory. So prior to that, almost all of the medieval buildings in Venice would have been knocked down or modified to look like the Renaissance or the Baroque period. There's a couple of exceptions, San Marco being the obvious one, but most of the buildings in Venice are going to all be that Baroque style. In fact, if you look at any painting of Venice, a Da Canale painting of Venice from the 17th century, it looks exactly the same today. None of those buildings really have changed, and that's purposeful. The Venetians very much keep the city looking exactly the way it always looked before, because they know that's what people want to see. When people come to Venice, they want to see the beauty of that period from the 16th, 17th centuries.
As we've talked with Jewel before about this, but you mentioned Istanbul, Venice, Rome. I'd have to imagine tourism is a very vital aspect to their economies. So when people do go over there and travel, what is the interaction? So, Ty Friel, the American, walks over there. What could my interactions be with, whether it's Istanbul, Venice, or Rome, with the folks around those communities?
Yeah, it really depends. I mean, in Istanbul, they are thrilled to see Americans because, as Jewel mentioned, a lot of Americans just kind of lump Istanbul in with the whole Middle East, which is not true at all. And so they're very happy to see Americans. I mean, Turkey is a NATO ally, so they feel like they're close to America, but not a lot of Americans go there. In Venice is just awash in tourism. And the few Venetians who are left have a kind of a love-hate relationship with tourists. And of course, there's a lot of Americans who go there, and they all go to the same places. That's the great thing about Jewel and her and the tours there, is that she is able to get us into places away from the tourists. For example, we always go have a special time where we go to San Marco, and it's just us. There are no other tourists there. We have the whole church to ourselves. So you get those kinds of things that you wouldn't get otherwise, where you can kind of get away from the crowds and see things in a more intimate setting. Rome has a lot of tourists, but the difference is Rome is so big. it can kind of swallow them whole, and you're fine. But Venice is not big. And so, you know, it's Venice is a city that today has a population of maybe 30,000, and yet in any given day, especially in the summer, you might have 60 to 70,000 tourists. So it's far more tourists than there are actual Venetians there. So it's a different kind of thing.
And Joe, I know we've talked about this before, but you are very intentional when you plan these trips that while you might get to see some of the touristy thing, a lot of these trips are focused on getting an experience that you wouldn't get maybe if we just went by ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. We work with a lady there, Donata Grimani is her name, and her family still lives in the same palace they've lived in since, I think, the 12th century. And she really helps us bring those hidden gems out so that we can do the things that every cruise ship that docks and lets the people off for 2 hours and then gets back on doesn't do. So we spend a full week just immersing ourselves in the culture and the history, and just a really magical experience there.
Tom, I also want to give you a chance here because you are coming out with a new book. It's called The Fall of the Republics, coming out on June the 9th. So, I mean, I guess the title kind of lets us know what it's about, but if you want to give folks an idea of what the book is all about.
Yeah, it's a history of some of the greatest republics that have existed both in the ancient and the medieval age. And it talks about how they were put together, but more importantly, how they fell. And then what it also does then is it looks at how the lessons of the falls of those republics was then used by the American founding fathers when they created their own republic, the American Republic, at the Constitutional Convention that created the Constitution that we still live under. All of those framers of the Constitution, they were all immersed in ancient history. Their education was in the classics. And so they focused very heavily on what caused those ancient and medieval republics to fall. And they tried to create a new republic that would avoid those problems. If you look at the debate, and I talk about this in the book, during the Constitutional Convention, they're talking much more about Greece and Rome than they are anything else. So the book tries to look at that, and then in a final chapter, I kind of examine how well those safeguards have held up over the last more than two centuries.
So when you visit places across the entire globe, I'm just curious about how republics look today, you know, maybe the ancient ones, and how, you know, they may have led to a prosperous society and how that translates to America. Can you kind of make those comparisons whenever you're somewhere else and see an ancient republic and see what our country looks like today?
Yeah, because, the basic design of a republic where you have separate branches of government that compete against each other and where there are checks and balances in them, The actual idea that goes back to ancient Sparta. And it's a difficult kind of government to get going. It's not the most common by any means. The most common is, of course, monarchy. But once you get them going, they're the best system for preserving liberties for the citizens. They're hard to get up and running, but once they're up and running, they're incredibly stable. Most great republics, will last for many centuries. As I mentioned, Venice, we last for well over 1,000 years. The same thing with Sparta, Carthage, I talked about in the book as well. So they can last for a very, very long time. Really, you have to kind of kill them, have something from outside come and destroy them. Now, Rome is the classic example where that didn't happen, and I do spend a lot of time in my book talking about what caused the Roman Republic to decline and fall, even though the Roman state did not. The Republic did. And so that's a big section of the book, talking about the things that led Rome's Republic, the hyper-partisanship, the rifts in the government, which ultimately led to the collapse of Rome's Republic.
Well, Joel, it sounds like if you're a fan of history, that one of these trips at least has to be on the calendar for next year.
Yeah, they're all on my calendar. So hopefully they'll be on other people's calendars too, because they're really special. They really are.
Where can people check out the calendar and list of trips and things like that?
You can sign up for our mailing list on my website. It's culturedtravel.org. And we're working on getting the new sites coming with the new trip information. They should be out pretty soon. And we're actually working on a new page just devoted to Tom and his trips with us too.
That's great. Where's your next trip?
I leave for Italy in a couple of weeks.
All right. Yeah. Sounds exciting. And Tom, if people wanted to check out the book, where can they get it at?
It's available anywhere, Amazon, anywhere else. You can also go to my website, thomasmadden.org.
Professor Thomas Madden and Joel Rozanski, Culture Travel. Joel, Tom, thanks so much for the time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, if you missed any of our program, as always, you can find it online. WISR680.com is the place to take care of that. The Let's Talk Show, also available on Spotify as well. I'm Tyler Frill saying so long for now. You're listening to WISR.
The information and opinions shared on this program are solely those of our guests and do not necessarily represent those of WISR, the Butler County Radio Network, or its staff and employees.